This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Is my mom here?
It's just us. You and us. Who you were in the park with?
I don't know names. I just got lost.
Where did you see the lady?
One lady.
The female jogger was severely beaten and raped.
Every black male who was in the park last night is a suspect. I need all of them.
What's going on with my son?
Your son was involved in a rape in Central Park.
Wait a second.
It is a case famously known for its miscarriage of justice. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Bramonte Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. In 1989, five teens of color accused of beating and raping a white female jogger in New York City's Central Park. All five were forced by police into confessing to a crime they did not commit. They served from 6 to 12 years in prison before another man, already in jail, admitted to the crime, proving what the five, then teens, had initially told police, that they were innocent. Now, a new four-part series on the Central Park Five, titled When They See Us, written and directed by Ava DuVernay, is set to air Friday on Netflix. You heard a little excerpt from that series as we came into the Insight Segment. Joining us in studio to talk about this four-part series and the Central Park Five is Asante Black. He's an actor who portrayed one of the Central Park Five, and he is also a native of Waldorf, Maryland, right here in the DMV. And April Turner, a social justice advocate and director of communications with Campaign for Youth Justice. The phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. April Turner, the Central Park Five really have never been out of the news, right? Mm-hmm. But now they are really coming back in force. 30 years later, we have this four-part documentary that's going to be on Netflix. Tell us a little bit more about the Central Park Five and the impact of this case.
Sure. It was an infamous case, like you said, 30 years ago, and it's still so prevalent now because all of the things happening in our country make it ripe for that to happen again. You had a DA's office that was going unchecked. You had high racial tensions in New York City. You had media that kind of just didn't get it all right. And all of that is just the perfect storm to make what happened to those young men happen. And that it can definitely happen again today if we don't learn lessons from it.
Asante Black, you portrayed Kevin Richardson, right. And from Harlem. You're 17 years old,
yes.
Right? You're graduating from high school tomorrow.
Yes, yes.
Tell us about your experience on the film.
Yeah, I mean, this is my first project ever. And so, I mean, it's just such a blessing to be able to start off with something as immense and as deep as this, you know? As heavy as the subject matter is, there was never a time on set where I didn't feel safe. You know, the director, Ava DuVernay, she was very, very loving, very warm. She has a huge heart. And she made sure that all five of us young boys who were playing, you know, the Central Park Five, always felt like we had a sense of safety on set. You know, there was a crisis counselor available to us on set, you know, and a lot of people have said that they never seen anything like that on set. But, I mean, we all kind of knew, you know, we had that sense of brotherhood between us because we knew what our common purpose was. We knew that this was so much bigger than just making a story for Netflix. It was about telling these men's truth and giving them the justice that they never got 30 years ago.
And how did you come to that understanding, knowing the importance of what you were doing?
Yeah, I mean, just being able to see these men come out, you know, smiling and joyous and happy after everything that they went through was kind of an anomaly, really. Like, you'd expect that they'd come out being bitter or angry at the world because they, from day one, said that they were innocent until they were coerced into these confessions, you know? And so we kind of realized, you know, they're not necessarily holding a grudge against the world for this, but we have to make sure that the world knows that they didn't do this, because when it was when they were exonerated, it was nowhere near such as big of a deal as it was when they were, you know, convicted. So we have to make sure that the world knows that they're innocent.
And April, you had mentioned how this could still happen again, and the argument could probably be that in many instances, it really still is happening again. In Arkansas, I think a man was pulled over, right, and the police, they had it on dash cam, was yelling that the black man had a gun, which he didn't, which could have had lethal consequences. Why do you think it is still happening with all of the attention that we've had on the Central Park Five and cases after that? You would have thought mm-hmm. that there had been some sense of, wait a minute, let's sort of step back. But we see instance after instance.
Absolutely. It is still happening every day. And this case, thankfully, got the attention that it needed so that it could put some eyes on it. But it is happening every day. There are still the same things as far as prosecutors going unchecked. Definitely there are more black boys and brown boys in the system that face harsher penalties than white youth of the same age. And again, for the same reasons, we still have a biased media. You know, we saw that President Trump was involved in the case then, and even as he ran for president in 2016, was still saying the same things. So a lot of things haven't changed that keep allowing it to happen.
And just to give a little background, before he was the president, after these five young men were arrested, President mm-hmm. Trump spent $85,000 for an ad that ran in the New York Times, the Daily News, the New York Post, and Newsday, asking for the death penalty. All right, the media called these men wolf packs, mm-hmm. gangs. And so, Asante, when you have to play this role of one of the Central Park Five, often you hear actors say they're so deep into the role that it's hard for them once their movie is or television series is over to kind of let go of that role because you're so engrossed in it. Did you have that issue, and how deep did you have to sort of kind of get into Kevin Richardson and his character, so to speak?
Definitely. Well, first of all, one thing that you just said in terms of them being a wolf pack that I wanted to point out was, you know, these guys, they actually didn't even know each other. So it's kind of mm-hmm. hard to be a gang or a wolf pack when you're literally coming from these different parts of Harlem, never knowing these guys in your entire life. That's the picture they painted, but it wasn't the reality. But in terms of, you know, going deep and trying to separate myself from the role, you know, I kind of noticed it's not hard for me to snap out of the emotion when I'm acting, but for this particular role, you know, I found myself, after they said cut, I found myself being kind of sort of angry for these men, you know? The scene isn't in the series, but it was in the script, so I had to, you know, reenact it. But Kevin Richardson's mom actually had a stroke in the courtroom while they were, you know, listing off the verdicts that he was guilty, guilty, guilty. So as he's being dragged away, you know, his mom has a stroke and he sees all of this. He doesn't know the next time he's going to see his mom. He doesn't know what just happened. I mean, in a 14-year-old's eyes, he could have thought that she had just died. And, you know, he's going to this scary place and doesn't know the next time he's going to see her. So reenacting that scene, I mean, that was very, very emotional. It really made me think, like, this guy really had to go through this. You know, Kevin was actually there on that day, and just seeing him and knowing that he had to endure all of this and seeing how strong he is now, it's absolutely insane.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our conversation tonight centers on the Central Park Five and a new Netflix four-part series that will focus on that story. 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines. Now on the phone line for us is Rob, calling from New York. Go right ahead, Rob.
I'm calling from Maryland, from Bowie, Maryland.
Oh, Bowie, thank you.
I'm a native New Yorker, and I will tell you, at that time, you know, while this trial was going on and this crime was committed, even though those five were convicted, all young black youth were on trial and were vilified and were looked at as just as super predators. Mm. You know, we talk about Trump, but we need to make certain that we talk about what Giuliani and Hillary Clinton, all of them, they labeled all of these young people as super predators, wolf packs, thugs, you know, and every black male, if you were, you know, in the wrong part of town, and you didn't have to be in the wrong part of town, you were demonized and looked at as if you were going to try to attack and or rape anybody
Rob,
in New York City.
Rob, how old were you during this time in 1989?
I was 14 at that time.
Okay, so you were right in that age range.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And there was nothing for it. I mean, you would get on a train, you go into New York City, you know, you felt comfortable traveling throughout the city. But while that was going on, you were, it was very tense. Mm-hmm. The racial tensions were unbelievable at that time.
Thank you so much, Rob. And he gives that personal experience, 14-year-old teenager, black male in New York City. And Asante, you're 17 years old. You're mm-hmm. here living the DMV, right? I'm a black male of a certain age, much older than you. But your experiences, are you cognizant of your position in society as a young black male, as you walk in a mall, as you're walking in the streets, or just going about your daily life? Do you have to be aware of your presence, who you are, and how you may be viewed?
Definitely. You always have to be aware, being a young man of color in America, not even just in America, but all around the world. You know, racism is everywhere. I find myself sometimes becoming a lesser version of myself because I don't want to be perceived in a certain way by the people that are constantly looking, you know. Being a young man of color, you constantly feel like you have eyes on you and people are watching you, and that you have to kind of become something that you're not and try to transform into what society, you know, wants you to be. And that's only just to protect yourself, you know, just to make sure that you get home at the end of the day, to make sure that somebody doesn't see you in a certain way that you're not, you know.
April, you know, one of the Central Park Five, or a couple of them, have all talked about criminal justice reform. I can't remember which particular one. It might have been even Kevin Richardson that pushed for having interrogations filmed. Right. So you have that as evidence to go back to see how police are dealing with that. When we talk about social reform and criminal justice reform, you're right in there. Mm-hmm. That's a political issue. And I know you've worked on Capitol Hill. You've worked with Nancy Pelosi, Sheila Jackson Lee, a couple others that I probably can't remember. So from a political standpoint, where does this film, where does the issue of incarceration, arrest of young blacks, fall from the political standpoint? What can be done?
Well, it's a terrible issue. And I think what the film highlights is that we're not powerless, and that most prosecutors are elected, and that we need to exercise our right to vote. And people are already gearing up for 2020. We're looking at all the candidates. But those down ballot races and looking at who's in your community and holding your local district attorney's office accountable is really, really important. And people need to know what's happening and take that power into their hands and vote wisely.
Do you expect to see the kinds of issues that you are pushing, that you advocate, being addressed in the 2020 presidential election? And I know it's early.
I do. I think you're seeing some of it already. You're seeing criminal justice reform candidates being asked about it, and we should definitely challenge them to answer those questions. That's going to be a very, very important issue for whoever sits in the White House in 2020.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. Nicole is calling. Go right ahead, Nicole, with your question or your comment.
This is more of a comment. It's I understand that, you know, things happen for a reason and it helps us along our journey in life, but it's really unfortunate that they lost all those years of their life behind a lie. But, you know, one of the things that really bothered me, because I can relate, I was the same age as they were, and, you know, I watched it every day on the news, just feeling sorry for them. The detectives at the end, before they were fully exonerated, you know, he just steadfast. And the evidence was clear, you know, because they did have just a little bit of DNA, you know, on top of the confession. How is it that, you know, I just feel like there just needs to be a lot more accountability. There needs to be a shift in the laws where officers are liable. I mean, because we're dealing with people's lives, and there's so much leeway to taint things and do things. You know, this isn't the first time, and it unfortunately probably won't be the last. But, you know, we have all this technology, but I just don't understand why there can't be more accountability and we hold these people liable and prosecute these officers. They shouldn't have all the protections that they have.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. So let's get to that. She says we have all this technology. Now probably in Central Park there are cameras everywhere. Does that make it more difficult, April, for something like this? Not the crime to happen, but for someone to be falsely accused like these five were.
I mean, there is technology everywhere, but yeah, it totally can happen. And we do see it happen every day. I think the caller was right and was really important. We've seen all types of research that shows that young Black men and boys, even young Black girls, are seen as older than they really are. And that really plays into how cops treat them and how they're treated in the system. And what I think the film does so well is it pits a face on all of these young men. They're not just the Central Park Five. That makes them an other. They are Raymond and Kevin and Antron and Youssef and Carrie. And I just think that's really, really important. And we all just need to view our youth that way. They are young people. They deserve to have lives and not be railroaded by the system.
Speaking of young, Asante, you started acting when you were six.
Yes.
Right? Tell me what a role like this does for you, or you believe will do for you in your career.
It really makes me realize how important it is to, as an entertainer, it's a huge responsibility. You know, I don't want to just take roles that mean nothing. I want to make sure that everything that I do has a purpose and can speak to somebody and can make a change, big or small.
And are there some that inspire you, that you look up to, that you hope to model your career after?
In terms of actors?
Mm-hmm. Or anyone in general, but I would say acting.
Sure. I mean, this might be, a biased answer, but I'd say Ava DuVernay, you know, the director of this film. Everything that she does has a purpose. Every single film that she does while being in this industry, you see a lot of directors kind of, you know, and there's nothing wrong with this, but taking their own, just making what they want to make with, and everybody has a reason why they do their own things, but Ava DuVernay, she has a specific purpose. She knows what her goal is, to help Black and brown people out, and you see that throughout all of her work.
And I love Queen Sugar. I hope, I'm assuming it's coming back. Wife and I are wondering, like, where is it? Is it coming back? And, you know, I've got my wife's name, one of the characters is in there. It's set in Louisiana, which is my parents' home state.
She has woven into that storyline criminal justice stories as well.
Exactly. So let's stay on that. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to bump over to the other side. The phone lines are lit up, so please just hang on. We'll get to you when we come back on the other side. We'll be right back after this quick timeout. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, tonight we're talking about the new documentary series, a four-part series, When They See Us. It will air on Friday, May 31st, the first of four parts. It is directed and co-written by Ava DuVernay, and it is about the Central Park Five, five teenagers in 1989 that were charged, arrested, and jailed for brutally attacking and raping a white jogger in Central Park. 13 years later, they were exonerated after a person who was in jail admitted to committing the crime. And tonight we're talking to one of the actors that is in that new docuseries, Asante Black. He is 17 years old. He is a native of Waldorf, Maryland, and he is in studio with us tonight, along with April Turner. She's a social justice advocate and director of communications with the Campaign for Youth Justice. We want you to be part of this very important conversation. Phone lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to those phone lines with our next caller. William is calling. Go right ahead, William, with your question or comment.
Oh, yes. I'd like to comment on the status perspective. The status of Black and white is a status. And we're being prosecuted in what we call a legal fiction system. That means that's a system that is pretty much made up, ordained, established, and being decreed from the perspective of a recessive existence, not a white person, a recessive. Now, you have two genes on planet Earth that's responsible for human existence. That's dominant and recessive. Recessive does not like the dominant gene, and it never will, because just for the simple existence of the dominant gene existing, it puts the recessive gene into a phase of...
All right. Thank you so much, William. I think William is going probably deeper scientifically than where we want to go. But April, you saw this film.
I saw part one and two, yes.
You saw part one and two, and we're waiting for part one right on the 31st.
Actually, all four parts are coming out at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, they all coming out at the same time? Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought they were going to pace it out. Why is that?
Well, I mean, that's just how Netflix does their things. I know Hulu kind of does, you know, individual parts, and Cable does individual parts, but Netflix, they just put it
you
all.
You can binge it.
Right. Yeah, binge it at one time.
Because I think they did that with the R. Kelly series, too,
yeah, I think
maybe?
That was on a different network.
Lifetime.
Yeah. You see, I got my cable systems all messed up. But you've seen the first two parts, cable channels, rather, April. Tell me what you took from what you've seen halfway through.
I took from it, I mean, obviously it's a case that we all know. We've seen the documentary that was done in 2012 by Ken Burns. I think what Ava was able to do was show these young men and show their families, show how hard it was, to show how their lives were destroyed. She really put a face on it and just made it, you know, called it what it was. She was able to do a full-length feature film. I also think what she was able to do was an entire generation has happened since this incident happened, and she is sharing the story for people that don't know it or haven't seen it before, and they're able to look at it through a fresh perspective.
And you would like to see more folks see this through screenings?
Yes. And my organization plans to host a couple, and I think it's a film, after you watch it, you definitely want to talk about it, that afterwards should have, you know, community, have a Q&A, have a discussion. I don't think you can just watch it and walk away and just, you know, just say, I'm done, that was a great film. I think you need to discuss it with someone.
Asante, you talked a little earlier about meeting. Did you meet all five?
Yes.
And you talked a little bit about your takeaway. What did they say to you? Did they give you any advice, or did they just sort of share their story or watch you with a critical eye to make sure you were doing everything just right?
They were very, very giving and very free. They let us kind of, you know, the story was there on the page, and so they let us do with that as we would. Of course, they shared with us, you know, things about their life and things like that. But really, my time with the five, and especially Kevin himself, we really just talked, you know. What I got most from that was, like I've been saying, these guys are so sweet and so pure and so happy. And it makes me think, what were they like when they were 14, 15, 16? Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to just portray the pain and sorrow that they were going through at this time, because there's more than that to who they are. They have that sweetness and that happiness as well.
Because you played the young Kevin, and there was another actor who played him, obviously, in his later years.
Yes.
Was there going in a specific question or questions that you wanted to ask Kevin? Or did you just want to get a feel for him?
I just asked him, is there anything that I need to know before portraying you? And he said, just do what you have to do, you know? He said that he trusted me. He told me his story, gave me what he gave me, and, you know, I really found that very generous of him.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The phone lines are open. Let's go back to the phone lines for our next caller. Katina. I'm sorry. I put an R on there. Katina, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, both. Katina Rojas. I'm a native New Yorker, and I'm on the board of Exodus Transitional Community in East Harlem. My high school, Julia Richmond High School, was on 67th Street between 1st and 2nd. And the day this happened, the police had to scour a certain radius, which included my high school. So I vividly remember the police coming to interview witnesses, mostly the boys that I went to high school with, which were African American and Puerto Rican. And Raymond is Puerto Rican. So I have a very early recollection of police coming into what was back then a fairly safe space, and that never left me. And the other comment is regarding sort of Latinos in the criminal justice issue. So to April's point about elections, immigration has sort of been the signature issue of political campaigns because they want to appeal to Latinos. But if you're Puerto Rican, or if you are a citizen, that might not be your major issue. You're with our brothers and sisters from a social justice perspective, but if you are an American Latino, you care about other issues as well. However, in the last few years, they sort of poked holes in the idea that Latinos only care about immigration. We don't. a growing number of us have been in this movement for 20, 30 years, and we are concerned about criminal justice reform as we all call for systemic changes at the federal, state, and community level. So elections do have consequences, and our community needs to understand the power of the prosecutor. So we can rally all we want, but if we continue to elect these prosecutors that yield this incredible power, sadly, we will continue to have the disastrous outcome that we had for all of these young men.
Well, thank you so much for those comments. April, did you want to sort of jump in on that? She covered a lot, and I think her important point was about elections matter. Your thoughts?
She's totally right, and these issues also impact Latino communities as much as they impact African-American communities. So totally right, and we all need to get out and vote and change this.
Do you expect folks getting out to vote? Do you expect folks to make this an issue? Criminal justice reform, President Obama tried to. Some criticism was that maybe he didn't make it as much of a priority as he should have.
I think, you know, people vote on a plethora of issues, but we all read the news every day and listen to it. We see these stories happen over and over again. And I do think there's a tide shifting. I do think we're tired. We're tired of seeing our young black men and boys being prosecuted at off the chart levels. And I do think it'll be a major issue in 2020.
Asante, during the filming and during your research for this series, was there anything that you learned that shocked you, surprised you, overwhelmed you, or had you sort of seen enough in your young life that you weren't really shocked or surprised?
Unfortunately, the latter. You know, I wasn't very surprised. You know, of course, it was very sad and very, you know, I guess you could say it shocked me, but I was not surprised. You know, things like this are still continuing to happen, and every single day in America. I mean, take Khalif Browder, for example. You know, he was sent to Rikers Island without a conviction, simply off of the accusation that he had stolen a book bag. And then he ended up taking his life when he gotten out because of things that he's seen. So things like this are continuing to happen every single day. I guess that what surprised me was just the magnitude that the DA's office and the police went to kind of force this confession out of these boys.
April, you know, one of the issues here, too, is what happens with these kinds of cases, the ancillary, the trickle down thing, the domino effect, how it affects families. You know, I saw some of the young men talking about, you know, it not necessarily destroyed families, but wreaked havoc on some of those families. Antron McCray, one of those who still says he doesn't speak to his father because his father told him, hey, just say you did it so we can get out of here. And he said he did it. He didn't leave out of there. And he spent, you know, 7.5 years in jail. Speak a little, too, about that domino effect and the effect that it has on family, friends, and relationships with these young people going to jail. Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things people in the film would be surprised at, because we don't normally get to see that, to see someone incarcerate a child and not call their parent with them, or to see them lie to their parent and say, just go ahead and say you did it, we'll all go home. I think being able to show that will really shock people at some of the prosecutor and police tactics that are used to get young men to confess to crimes that they didn't commit.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. Calling now is Kenneth. Go right ahead, Kenneth, with your question or comment.
Yes, sir, how y'all doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm just to this. What they're saying is correct. However, we've got to get into it. The nitty-gritty of it is that our people, black people, white people, Caucasians, we're two different people. And we still doing the same thing, expecting a different result. We've been marching for a long time. The only solution to this is separation. This can play over so many. How many times do we keep making moves about this? It keeps happening. Their nature is not like our nature. And that's it.
And what is our nature, in your opinion?
The nature,
when you say our.
In your opinion, the nature of the black man is righteousness. The nature of the Caucasian is unrighteousness. This been shit over years ago. We got to wake up and smell the coffee.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Kenneth. He takes sort of a different point of view. Asante, you wanted to sort of get in on those comments?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I heard him say, you know, how much longer we're going to be making movies about this. And I've heard so many people say that.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. But there's actually a quote by, I think, Zora Neale Hurston, where she says, If you are silent about your pain, they'll kill you 1,000 times and say that you enjoyed it. You know, so we can't be silent about our pain. We can't let people think that we are comfortable in these circumstances that we are in America. You know, we're very uncomfortable, and we have to wake people up to the realities that people of color go through in America.
Are you surprised when you get that reaction?
I'm not, because it makes sense. You know, these are very traumatic events, and I'm sure that it's very hard to relive them. It's very hard to, you know, see these things happen to our people, but it's not necessary. It's so much bigger than that. You have to be able to go through something to get something in the end.
Asante makes such a great point here on this, April, because I teach a history class at a community college, and when we start dealing with slavery, and I show documentaries on that, and you see pictures of that, and we talk about Reconstruction. You know, many students talk about how difficult it is for them to watch that, and sometimes I think I have to prep them for it, like be ready for this. And so to Asante's point, can it be too much for those, and is it just too much for maybe certain groups, or does it have a different impact on, say, folks of color, versus white citizens or other citizens of ethnicity?
I agree. It is a lot. But we do need to watch these things. We need to read these things and see them. And that's why I suggest talking to someone afterwards. And I know my organization is working on a discussion guide so people can watch it and then be able to discuss it. But also to the caller's point, you know, part of my role is to raise awareness, and I'm never done doing that. There's no one, people still need to hear these stories, need to see it. There's always a level of awareness that needs to be raised.
And do you have to sort of reinvent how you present that? Or is there a tried and true sort of system to trying to bring people to awareness?
Absolutely. Depending on who you're talking to, you might change how you tell that. So absolutely.
And we're talking about different groups, whether you're talking about to black folks,
yes,
white
or
folks,
regionally,
Hispanic,
or Southern, you know, or, you know, for criminal justice, some people are more moved by the economic argument than, you know, there's all kind of whatever motivates you. There's a reason, there's a way for us to talk to you about it. So, yeah.
We are talking tonight about the Central Park Five, and more specifically about a new docuseries that will be airing on Netflix starting on Friday, May 31st, When They See Us. Important conversation. The phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. We will continue right after this quick timeout. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight, our focus is on the new Netflix 4-part documentary series called When They See Us. Its focus is the Central Park Five, 5 teenagers in 1989 who were convicted and sent to prison for allegedly, or at least they were convicted, of brutally attacking and raping a jogger in Central Park, a white woman. 13 years later, they were exonerated when an inmate at the time admitted to the attack. And tonight we're talking about this series that will air, written and produced, directed by Ava DuVernay. In studio with us is an actor in that series, Asante Black. He is a native of the DMV from Waldorf, Maryland, in fact. Also with us is April Turner, social justice advocate and director of communications with the Campaign for Youth Justice. And part of that campaign, April, is that you are looking at ending the prosecution, the incarceration of young people under the age of 18. Tell us about the effects on communities of that, and why are we seeing those under 18 prosecuted and put in jail still?
Sure. Well, we're incarcerating our children at alarming rates, and, you know, people are scared. And we do still have this, as much, you know, as it was 30 years ago in the film, this lock them up mentality, get them off the street, put them away. But it just has devastating effects. You know, young people are different. Their minds are different. And when they're placed in that kind of situation, we're saying that you're not worthy of rehabilitation. You're not worthy of growing and learning and becoming a more productive citizen. And it's happening a lot, and it's pretty scary.
And Asante, what's your sense of these things that you see are happening? As an actor, do you believe it's important, especially as a young person, right? Social justice, to be socially active Or are you leery of that and still trying to make sure that you can work in this business?
Yeah. As an actor, I don't want my voice to be taken away from me by any means, you know? And I think that we're seeing more and more of people being able to speak up and use their voice in the recent years, which is great, because all that's going to continue to happen is that's going to keep growing and growing, where it gets to the point where we can continue to speak up and speak out on the topics that we care about. So, you know, you're always kind of wary and, you know, of the things or the repercussions that might be taken on you if somebody doesn't like something that you say. But, I mean, that's just a risk that you have to take, because, you know, this, like I said before, it's so much bigger than just being an actor. It's so much bigger than being an entertainer. This is life and death, honestly.
And as a young black man, as an actor, right? Let's be honest, there are probably limited roles, right? Is that a concern for you, right? That you know, there's only going to be so many roles out there. Hopefully you will grab them all. But being too socially active, is that ever a concern that you feel like you have to weigh those two things?
In terms of weighing them, because we, like I said, we're getting to the place where it's not as, it's kind of sort of being celebrated now that you can speak up. You know, people are liking to see people that they can relate to, you know, coming up. And it's also, the industry is taking a turn where there are more roles for black people, you know, more black directed films, more black screenwriters. You know, we're not just being seen as, you know, thugs and criminals on TV anymore. We have so many more complex roles that really show the authenticity of, you know, of who black people are.
April, we hear this young man, he's only 17, and he's talking like someone who's a bit older, right? So is there a sense that when you see young people like Asante, mm-hmm. right, speaking the way he does in terms of the issues and wanting to be socially active, what do you think is fueling that? We had some millennials on yesterday, and their way of thinking, right, is just different. Does social media play a part in sort of helping propel that?
I think it does. We're able to share more and see more and, you know, get outraged more at the things that we're seeing. And I do think it makes you want to take action. You can't just sit on the sidelines. And I am motivated to see that young people want to get involved. So I think that's great.
And what do you think of the Central Park Five and what they're doing now? Many of them are advocates, mm-hmm. as we mentioned at the top of the show, for criminal justice reform. Some are public speakers, right? Some have their own businesses. Do you see what they're doing now, right, as emblematic of sort of overcoming a system that had hampered them at some point? Or do you ever overcome something like that, especially in the work that you do and see?
I'm sure there are still effects that still haunt them. I think what they're doing is very brave and noble, because remember, behind them are millions of incarcerated men and women that don't have that platform, that it didn't happen that way for them. And I do think them sharing their story helps share the story of so many. And thankfully, someone did come forward and they were exonerated, but that doesn't always happen. So them sharing their stories is very, very important.
Asante, I know you had to really read up on this story, right? Mm-hmm. Know all about it. And you probably read about what Donald Trump said and did during this time. Now he's the president of the United States, but he does not appear in the film. I think they may talk about, you know, what he published in the New York papers. Were you surprised at all that they didn't have a character portraying Donald Trump? And does it matter?
Yeah, so he's in the film, but you see clips of things that he's actually said in real life in 1989. But no, there's no character portraying him.
We see the real Donald Trump.
We see the real Donald Trump and the things that he said about the Central Park Five in 1989. So, and I think that was completely genius of Ava to do, because it makes it so that we're not making this the Donald Trump show. You know, we're not making this about Donald Trump. We're not making a caricature out of him or anything like that. Mm-hmm. These are the things that this man actually said in 1989. And even as recently as 2016, during his campaign, he said he still believes that the Central Park Five are guilty. So, you know, I think that seeing him and his part in this this case and now seeing that he's president of the United States, it's kind of indicative of a larger problem that we have. And even just people not knowing about his part in this case and knowing how much he did to kind of put fuel to the fire that the media had already started.
And April, obviously this is going to sort of bubble up the Donald Trump involvement in this case. You know, once this hits the air, there's so many quotes here that we could sort of follow of what he said. But to Asante's point, he said, right, after the young man in jail admitted to it, after there was a settlement and the $40 million, I believe, for the Central Park Five, Donald Trump said, quote, settling doesn't mean innocence. Mm-hmm. And that seems very ironic because we know he settled his case with Trump University, right? Mm-hmm. So does that mean he's guilty? This is probably a rhetorical question, but are you shocked that Donald Trump is still hanging on to this sense that the Central Park Five are guilty in some way?
Absolutely not. And it's not just him. Linda Fairstein, one of the prosecutors in the case, also still holds on to that belief.
Why do you think?
You know, because they concocted a big lie, and you know, who wants to be told 30 years, you know, something years later that you're wrong? So, you know, and I know just a little bit about her. She's gone on to become a mystery writer, and she was up for a big award this year, and the award committee took her award away because of her beliefs and her role in this case. So, what you did 30 years ago is never going to leave you. It's still there. And it's just a sad story that people would still hold on to these lies, given that there's DNA evidence that exonerates these people.
And that's the question I have for you, that if we know DNA has proven that they're innocent, right, what rational person, especially a lawyer, prosecutor, will still hold on? Why is that in the work that you do, in the advocacy that you do? You see these folks in the courtrooms and how they deal all the time. Wouldn't it be easier just to say, listen, we thought they were guilty. The scene, the setting where New York was at that time seemed that they would be guilty, and we had a rush to judgment. Why not? Why not do that? What is holding them back from doing something like that?
That is a great question, and probably one of the more outraging parts of the film I think people will find. And in this era that we live in of fake news, I just find all that very interesting that you would, 30 years later, still hold on to that belief, you know, given all the evidence that shows otherwise.
I think that them kind of holding on to this story for so long, they've convinced themselves that, you know, I put all this work into this case, you know, we figured something out, we set this up, so it has to be right, you know, we did all of this, it has to be that these five boys are guilty. You know, I think Linda Fairstein, she just, the DNA evidence that's there that convicts the actual rapist, she just says, oh, that's just the sixth man, you know, we just missed the guy.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's these things that they try to piece together and try to pull together to kind of try to make it all work out. But in reality, I mean, it is what it is. They're exonerated. We know that they're innocent. We know that the police coerced these confessions out of them. And they just have to live with that at the end of the day.
Now, Asante, we know there's a special screening coming up. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So Union Temple Baptist Church is hosting a screening of the first part of When They See Us on June 7th at 7 o'clock p.m. We will be showing the first part and then also be having a panel discussion with me, somebody from the Innocence Project, and also a person who was also wrongfully incarcerated. All of the proceeds, the tickets are $10, and all of the proceeds will be going towards manhood training at Union Temple Baptist Church. Basically, what manhood training does, it's a group of about maybe 10 young men, 10 young black boys, who are basically preparing themselves and arming themselves for adulthood in this world that goes against black boys. So you're going to want to go to whenntheyseeusdc.eventbrite.com to get your tickets for that. It'll be an amazing event.
And April Turner, in our last few seconds, your closing thoughts, what folks should take away from this conversation, and if they wanted to get in touch with you and your organization, how they can do that.
Sure. Well, I'm encouraging everybody on Friday to watch it, binge watch it. It is very, very good, and you'll learn a lot. And definitely check out my organization, the Campaign for Youth Justice. We are at cfyj.org. And then, of course, on Twitter and Instagram, we're just Justice for Youth, F-O-R spelled out.
She is April Turner, social justice advocate and director of communication relations with Campaign for Youth Justice. He is Asante Black, an actor. He is right there in When They See Us. He's from the DMV, Waldorf, and he is graduating tomorrow from North Point High School. Congratulations on all that you're doing, Asante.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. April, thank you so much as well. That's the Daily Drum on HR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, May 29th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher.